Welcome to the Tradies in Business podcast with your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Divert your phone and grab a brew as Waz and Nick unpack tips, tales, secrets and stuff-ups from guests both inside and outside your trade, helping educate and inspire you to break the cycle of gut-busting and money stress and create a true trade business.
Okay, we're recording. So the spinning wheel of death has ended and we are now back online. It is such a typical Waz and Nick way to start a podcast episode. Coxie, how are you this morning?
I'm well. It'd be boring if we did anything but that, really.
I'm still laughing on the inside, Coxie, about a webinar we did not so long ago where we were in the wrong Zoom room, and as we entered the correct one, didn't realize that we had like 25 people already there waiting, and one of us may have let an expletive go about
that. Would be me. It might have been several of them in a string, actually.
At least you own it.
And somebody actually typed in the chat box and said, "We can see and hear you." Vanessa Lambert from Hazard Co., welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here. But be kind, I'm a podcast virgin. So hopefully I do okay.
You'll be fine.
You'll be better than us, that's for sure. So, listeners, we are joined by Vanessa from Hazard Co. Hazard Co. were recent supporters of the Tradies in Business Excellence Awards. So, and we've been having some great chats with yourself about safety, and we're looking forward to doing some more stuff with you guys around that. I guess talking safety this is going to be an awful pun that I do not intend, but it's been done to death. There you go. You knew that was coming. Sorry.
That's shocking, Warwick. I'm sure you get up at like 4 a.m. and write down all the terrible puns you could make.
I don't even have to try, Coxie. They're just bad straight out of the gate. So it has been talked about a heck of a lot, and I feel like sometimes small business owners are probably sick of hearing about it, and that can lead to a bit of apathy. What do you guys see out there in the marketplace, Vanessa, as far as attitudes to safety?
Yeah, look, they do vary. So obviously we deal only in the construction industry. So I can only speak for the guys in construction, but we do work with lots of different trades and also builders who are managing lots of different trades. So I guess the attitudes differ depending on which side of that spectrum they sit. But, you know, I also own a trade business, so I can give you my exact point of view from working with my husband, who's been a Sparky for over 25 years. And it's definitely been a journey. I think initially the blokey attitude and the she'll be right, I'm invincible type is quite normal. It's like, oh, it won't happen to me. I'm only going to do it this once. It's not a big deal. You know, you're making a big deal of nothing kind of thing. And then it's unfortunate that it usually does take something happening before the realization hits that actually this is serious. Like I can actually hurt myself to the point where I may not wake up in the morning, which is obviously not what we want. So I wish it was better. I wish it wasn't so hard. And I think a lot of the times, you know, the things in place, so paperwork and so forth, don't necessarily mean that you're going to be safe at the top of the ladder. Mm-hmm. And so that's essentially where Hazard Co. came in. So we were created by a builder and a tradie, and they were just so confused and sick of all the OH&S legislation that they didn't understand. They wanted to simplify it and make a process that was easy to follow, and so there was kind of no excuse not to do it. And eventually what that ended up as is a digital solution, which what it is today, that reduces risk on site and improves people's experience of safety. So making it more of a team conversation, like anything. And I know that you guys are big on mental health. It just comes down to communication. It's really actually very simple. If we keep the conversation open and honest, then the likelihood is we're going to have less incidents on site.
I think it needs to be a conversation. When I think about, so as a builder, we did our safety stuff many moons ago now, I think about 7 or 8 years ago, and it was the most complex, difficult, challenging rubbish I'd ever put in place, and none of it made anybody safe. It was just sign here, do this, do that, but nobody was any safer. It didn't reduce any risk. And it almost made people more complacent because they felt like they had a safety net of safety that wasn't actually there, because it still takes the people on the ground, whoever's there, to actually assess the risk in the moment and ensure that they're doing everything possible to keep themselves safe and those around them safe. And it's probably the exposure to the things you think can't happen. You know, even with 25, 30 years of experience,
yep,
the strangest things can happen on site. And if you haven't followed due process, suddenly you're in all sorts of trouble. And I think that having the paperwork, the old way of doing things, just increases the complacency, and people actually aren't taking the time to consider what's in front of them on a day-to-day basis.
100%. And you're not the only person to say that. In fact, pretty much every conversation that we have with the builder starts with, oh yeah, I have a folder somewhere. Mm. Where is it? In the office, in the ute, in the portaloo on site. Oh yeah, does anyone actually do anything with it? No, but I have a folder. And it's like, okay, well, that's better than nothing, I guess. But essentially, yeah, creating something that's digital that can be used on the ground in real time, where you can actually assess what's happening and then note it and record it, is as easy as it's going to get. And I think there's a lot of attitudes that go with it. I mean, essentially there's never going to be a solution that, you know, fixes all problems or reduces all risk on site. There's still, you still need to have, you know, some common sense, and you still need to have conversations, and you still need to speak up, because unfortunately we haven't quite got rid of the stigma of, you know, just do it, you know.
Yeah.
And we've been in those scenarios, and I'll put my hand up and say, yeah, we have done some stupid things in our time. We've just gone, oh yeah, he's told us to do it, better just get it done. Yeah. But over the years, and I guess, you know, having a family and definitely having an experience ourselves where, you know, hubby ended up in hospital for 5 days, was an eye opener where you go, like, hang on a minute, I've got a duty of care to the people that work for me. I've got a duty of care to my family. I've got a duty of care to myself. So I'm just going to stand up and say, no, I'm not doing it. It's not safe, and I'll come back when it is. And you get laughed at, you get name called. It's pretty horrible. But essentially we just need to get better at doing it, because you can't fix it after you've made the mistake.
That's the big problem. You mentioned common sense, and I think other than the tradie memes or the people in the tradie memes that we see out there, most tradies are really practical with their common sense, right? But they tend to get caught up in that culture that you're talking about. There still is too much of that culture within the construction industry. She'll be right. Oh, don't be a sissy. Pull your socks up, pull your skirt up. You'll be okay. Just do the job. Do as you're asked. And that's rubbish. We need to start calling that out. And we need to do it loudly so that there is the push for change, because it's incredible to me to see, just even in my own community, I've referenced this before on the podcast, maybe 18 months ago now, I walked out the front and somebody's re-roofing a house without any edge protection. How do you even get to that point? And that stuff is still happening. Like, there were 5 guys on the roof. Why doesn't any of them stand up and say, this isn't acceptable? I want edge protection. We have to. It's legal. But that stuff isn't happening because we're not calling it out enough yet.
Yeah. And I think there's also not much education around it. So we know that it's legal, that you've got to have it. But a lot of the guys doing the work have not had any training within their apprenticeships, and it's kind of like, I don't know, this is just the way I've always done it, so I don't realise I'm meant to be doing it any other way. So I think there does need to be a little bit more of an education process, as well as, you know, an attitude adjustment
Absolutely. You used a word before, Vanessa, of attitude. And I feel like there's a disconnect between the legislation and the legislative requirements, the paperwork, even if it is digital, and the attitude to quote unquote safety. It's almost like people just become complacent as well, because it hasn't happened on their building site, or they've never had anything happen to them, or nothing serious anyway. Mm. And it's the same way people drive their cars. They get complacent because they haven't been in an accident, or they haven't lost a loved one. And their attitude is one of, not consciously for most people, I think, but the attitude is that it'll never happen to me scenario.
Mm.
And yeah, it requires a level of vigilance, I think, around behaviors. And, you know, I'm a passionate home handyman, and I use power tools and chainsaws and all that sort of stuff. And for me, because I don't do it all the time as my form of employment, I actually stick to what I know to be safety practices, because, you know, common sense is not that common in the world. You know, I'm using a chainsaw and I wear all the gear all the time. I was the same as a motorcycle rider, all the gear all the time. And I recall having a chat with a client a few years ago who actually cut himself with an angle grinder on a site. And luckily, it was only luck that he didn't actually remove an entire thumb, and he wasn't wearing gloves. And I said, now I'm a business coach, I'm not a safety guy, but I said to him, do you think gloves might have been a good idea using an angle grinder, dude? He's like, no, they're dangerous, man. You can't hold the grinder properly. I'm like, okay, I'm not even going to have this conversation with you right now. If you'd been wearing gloves, you wouldn't have chopped a hole in your hand. They're not comfortable or something, but this is the attitude thing. I mean, how the heck do you shift that with compliance?
It's baby steps, and actually two very different things. So, you know, I'll be the first to say that compliance doesn't always necessarily mean you're going to do everything right. And that might sound odd, but there are lots of people who are qualified safety advisors who still argue the fact on certain compliance documents, because they don't necessarily change what you're doing. Just because you have a piece of paper doesn't mean you're actually going to act on what it says. And I think that's the biggest thing. As a whole, from a legislative point of view, it is something that I think needs to be reconsidered and reworked. And look, there is definitely conversations happening, which is awesome, and it's a work in progress. And I think that's what kind of makes our solution a little bit different, is that we change the language. It's still compliant, but it's making it simple. It's not overcomplicating things. No one reads legislation and goes, oh yeah, I completely understand who's responsible that is. I mean, you know, there's numbers and codes and, you know, I don't know, is that my responsibility or is that someone else's? It's very hard to decipher. Mm. So it's really, we sort of pick out the main ones and say, this is sort of your absolute minimum standard of compliance. And then here is what you should be doing on an ongoing basis. So active safety management. And that's outside of compliance, but really the part that's going to make a difference to you, your business, and all your work. It's because it becomes fairly evident when you start doing active safety management what things you're doing well and what things not so well. And a lot of guys are actually afraid to admit it. They're like, oh no, I don't want to write that down. I don't want to record that, you know, we didn't test in tag, or that somebody had a ladder that wasn't scratch. And I'm like, but you have to, because that's part of the process. That's you learning that, hang on, we've got to put some better processes in place, or got to have a toolbox talk and get everyone to test and tag, whatever it might be. You're not going to do it unless you've put a cross against it and said, we didn't get that right on that one occasion. And that's okay. Like, we're not going to get it right every time, but we need to get in a process where we can sit down, just like anything else. You know, when you run a business, for you guys, you know, being business coaches, I'm sure that you tell your clients that they should have a 90-day plan, and at the end of the 90 days they should review it. And, you know, you don't stick to the same 90-day plan forever. It's going to change and evolve as your business changes and evolves. Well, safety is no different. You've constantly got different people working on your job site. You're never going to have the same issues always reoccurring. But if you do have the same issues always reoccurring, that's also a red flag. Hey, we're not doing anything about it. We're just, we know that it's there and it's, that's it. And I don't know how to fix it kind of thing. So having those simple process in it, and it's literally 5 minutes, you know, 5 minutes on a job site that could possibly change the whole direction of how your team performs and could eventually save someone's life. So that's the end goal, obviously. We want everyone to go home safely.
It sometimes seems as though that's almost the only considered risk of not having safety in place is a death, which is catastrophic for so many reasons. And yet, you know, in terms of statistics, and they can be horrendous at times, I feel like the bigger risk to business owners and to those of you listening to this podcast are the seemingly smaller incidents because of the disruption to business, the increase in work cover premiums, the stress and the distraction of dealing with an incident, sometimes serious, but, you know, there's thousands of incidents every day, unfortunately. And, you know, we get to hear about some of them here from our clients, sometimes with panicked messages like, oh my gosh, this has just happened to one of my team members. What the hell do I do now?
Yeah.
And I think there needs to be a better understanding from employers, particularly in small to medium business, that it's about actually managing those, you know, less catastrophic events, because they can actually have a catastrophic effect on your business.
100%. Yeah, totally agree.
What you see, Vanessa?
Yeah, absolutely. So we obviously have incident reporting as part of the app. So we do get flagged when an incident happens on one of our members' sites. And then usually we'll follow up with a phone call and check that they're okay. You know, varying scale of severity, from near misses when literally nothing has really happened, but they're just as important to report, because the next time it could result in something that's very different. Yep. To, you know, a cut finger that requires a little bit of first aid and a band-aid, to, you know, a hospital visit, to falling off roofs. So, you know, massive sort of shift. But in each case, you're 100% right. There is always going to be a disruption, and then there is stress that comes. Even with the most, you know, the smallest one, you know, are they going to report me? Have I done something that I shouldn't have been doing? I know it hasn't resulted in anything right now, but are they going to come back at me in 3-6 months? What paperwork was I meant to file? Am I meant to tell someone? Do I call work safe? Do I call work cover? Do I pretend it never happened and pray for the best? Like, there's, you know, there's so many things going through your head. We've had it happen in our own business, and it is scary and it's frightening, and you think, oh my God, you know, what happens now? Am I going to get investigated? Is someone going to come out and, you know, give me a slap? Well, I don't know. I don't know, because I've never been.
Yeah.
We're, I guess, lucky that for our members, we do provide, you know, advisory support in those instances, and so we can step them through the process and just hold their hand and say, you know, it's okay, we'll work through it. But it is a learning experience, and often, unfortunately, it does take that learning experience for them to sort of reevaluate their current processes. But in most cases, the good news is that they have been doing active safety management. So if it was big enough for someone to come out and investigate, they've got a whole heap of, you know, reporting to say, look, we were managing the job really well. This is what happened on this day and this day. It's unfortunate that in this particular instance, human error has prevailed, and we've still ended up with an incident. But that can be the difference between not a worry, you know, great work on active safety management, let's, you know, close this and move on with our lives, and a massive, you know, infringement or improvement notice. So that's the scale of difference. Do nothing, probably going to result in a much heftier penalty. Doing something, hearing, can, you know, result in less of a penalty and more of a this is how you should be doing it. Let's move towards, you know, a better process.
Having been on the receiving end of a few inspectors on site on multiple occasions, thanks, team, I can assure you that having that support is invaluable. Having someone who understands the process, who's been there before, can pat you on the back and say, actually, it's okay. You've done absolutely everything you can to balance the risk here. This one's on the individual, which fortunately for me, each time for us was they had nothing to do with us personally, but of course they're our team. So, and it's our site. So as the principal contractor, we carry the balance of risk. So we have to go through that process and it's really stressful. It's very arduous. There's a lot of paperwork that needs to be provided, and to have someone or a system in place that makes it simple, it's your insurance policy. It's making sure that you as the business owner have done everything you can to keep your team safe. Yes, they're still going to make mistakes or strange things can happen. We had a site where it wasn't even it was external to us. However, it crashed into our guy's ute. So a water truck had paused or pulled up on a hill and was pumping water in for a swimming pool, and his brakes let go. Came straight down the hill, very high, steep hill, straight into our guy's ute, ruined his ute. He had literally just stepped back when he heard the noise and a shout, looked up. So he was the luckiest guy ever. So again, that was not our fault, had absolutely nothing to do with our active site. And yet we suddenly are part of this investigation because it impacted one of our team members' vehicles and very easily could have impacted him as well. So just having someone there almost to hold your hand through the process, to reassure you, to help you understand or gather what you need to gather to ensure that you've got everything in place, totally changes the conversation. And I can promise you, when the investigators do turn up and they can see that you have demonstrated ability to have been actively working on your safety plan, their conversation changes too. They're not looking for the faults anymore. They're suddenly looking for how can we help you get through this process. Mm-hmm. So
there's been a massive shift. I mean, each state is slightly different. Obviously, we've got, you know, the overreaching Safe Work Australia, and then each state and territory has their own individual, you know, state legislative body. But there has been a massive shift in the way that each state body works and functions. I think that whole, you know, authority type attitude, you know, power tripping type health and safety inspector is a thing of the past. It doesn't work. It just pisses people off and essentially creates even more stigma that I don't care either way. I'm still not going to do it because you just annoyed me. And frankly, you're an a-hole is pretty much, you know, what you're going to get from the building site. So it's really awesome that over, I'd say probably the last 5 years particularly, but even the last 10, there's been a massive shift in the way they campaign. There's been a massive shift in the way they audit, in their personas on site, and it is more around, you know, at the end of the day, we are trying to help. It's not, we're not here to make life more difficult, but it is, you are the principal contractor and it is your responsibility, so you have to be able to prove that you're doing everything you possibly can. Unfortunately for builders and for some of our members, that can be quite tricky, particularly at the moment because, you know, there is a big trade shortage, so you don't have a huge selection of trades that you can pick and choose from. And so when you get, you know, a couple of guys who are doing things they probably shouldn't be doing, it becomes really hard to tackle because in an ideal world, you'd love to tell them, get off my site.
Yeah.
And I'll find someone else to do it. But at the moment, that's really hard because that goes back to what you were saying, was around, you know, that delays my job site, that delays my cash flow. Yep. So it's how do we balance this? How do we create something that's simple and easy to use that people aren't going to be too standoffish on, that still ticks the boxes, that we can still continue working and doesn't sort of disrupt our ability to function. At the end of the day, you know, a builder's license can be revoked pretty easily if someone on their site is doing something stupid. And it's unfortunate, but that's the way that's the way the system's designed, and it's tough to handle. If we can get everybody on the same page, that's I guess the whole point is, doesn't matter if you're a one-man band or a principal contractor or a building site, we should all be doing whatever we can to keep ourselves safe and keep everyone else around us in check.
I think that's an important point to make as well. We talk a lot about builders and primary contractors, and I was going to say government needs to make someone ultimately responsible. That's the way our society is set up, whether you agree with it or not. We're all about, you know, affixing responsibility and liability to a party or a company or somebody at the end of the day. And for the sub-trades, you know, electricians, plumbers, landscapers, any of the other trades working either with builders or on their own, it's looking at it as a team approach. You know, if I'm a plumber on a builder's job and I do something dumb and cause an issue, that affects the builder as much as it does me, but it flows back to me, no pun intended. I can't help it. It's just a skill. But that flows back to me because, you know, the builder's site gets shut down for a period of time, or you know it delays the job, and that's going to affect me as the sub trade anyway. So, you know, I think there's sometimes a bit of shirking of that responsibility. It's like, well, you know, we don't have to worry about it because it's the builder's site. But the problem is, we're all contributing to how well that works or doesn't work as part of just anybody being involved in any of those projects. And I guess more than that, it's just, I don't personally understand the blasé nature of some employers and employees, to be honest, about risk. You know, it's a weird paradox for me to watch this happen, because as a society, we appear to be so risk averse these days. We're so afraid of risk in so many areas. And, you know, we're removing risk from so many places in our lives, and yet you go to building sites, or, you know, lunatics like me using a chainsaw on the weekend, and we just get really sloppy, and the risks are huge for that stuff. So anyway, I haven't asked you a question, Vanessa. I've just lamented a whole bunch of human behavioral stuff. I did have a question.
I actually agree. It's a good point. Like, we as a society, I mean, you know, and I think that's come from the legal ramifications of so much now, like you can't sort of put one foot in front of the other without someone trying to sue you. So there's always, you know, even in the school ground, you know, no more monkey bars or flying foxes or whatever it is, because someone might come back at us for their kid breaking their arm, which obviously, you know, was pretty normal 20 years ago. So, yeah, it's really interesting, and that's a really good point. That in general life, we're sort of, you know, bubble wrapping everyone, and then you get on a job site and it's just like, it's like a party. I'm free. I'll just do whatever I want. Like, it's like, no, it's not meant to work that way. This should be kind of, you know, at least level playing field, or the opposite. Let's switch it up and kind of take on a little bit more of a safety attitude.
On fire. I just drew a breath at the same time, so I'm going to let Nick go.
We do this all the time. I'm really keen to explore something you said earlier, Vanessa, about using common language. So a big part for us when we were trying to implement our safety plan in the first place was doing things like having our safety data sheets. And the guys would be like, well, what do I even need to know this for? And honestly, in the beginning, it was, well, I gave them the spiel that the legal paperwork said why we needed to have it. But when we took that conversation back and said, look, it's like this. If you put silicon onto the apprentice's sandwich and he's got to go to hospital, the ambulance driver needs to know what he's just eaten. It's as simple as that. And when you take it back to those simple terms, then the people on site can actually attach their values to those simple terms, and it becomes something that's easy to implement. So I'm really keen to hear how the company has translated that legal jargon that makes no sense to anyone into terms that we can all understand.
Yeah. So some things we can't change, like the names of things. So, you know, like the site-specific safety plans in each state have certain names, and obviously we have to represent the same names, but it's more around the content that sits within it. So I think one of the biggest things with the HAZ ecosystem is that you don't need to be an OH&S professional. You don't need to have an OH&S professional in the business at all, because we give you everything that's legislated within the system. Then we break it down into stuff that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to identifying hazards, for example, most builders are going to know what hazards are on their job site because they do it every day. Mm-hmm. So they pick a hazard, and then automatically it'll drop down with all the control measures that could or should be used in that particular within that particular hazard or risk. And then they just click on the ones that they will be using in that on that job site. So the language, where we can, we will modify it to be the most simple possible explanation of what we're doing. There are certain instances where we can't, because we obviously want the system to still be in compliance. So if someone's checking it, they know what they're looking at. Yep. But the format's all very basic. So when it comes to swims, for example, don't know how often you guys have been looking at safe work method statements, but some of them can be like 28, 40 pages of just a lot of information that I'm pretty sure no one ever reads. And likelihood is they sign it because someone said you've got to sign it before you start the job, if you're lucky and they've even got one to begin with. And it's just, I don't really understand what this means. So when we designed our swims, it's literally, one table, four columns, and here, pick up your saw and do this and then do this and then do this. And that's exactly laid out in very simple terms. This is the risk involved with the work you're doing. This is the control you're going to use. And these are the steps you're going to take to perform the task. All of a sudden your 28 pages becomes four pages, and it's much more easy to visually digest as well as really understand. And sometimes we get called out on it, and it's like, oh, this looks too basic. Like, how could this be, a proper swims? And it's like, well, it still includes everything as far as legislation is concerned. It's just you're so used to seeing, all these other templates that have bazillion pages of stuff that no one's ever looked at. What in your mind do you think is better? Four pages that actually gets read and actioned, or 28 pages that no one understands and is likely signed and just walked onto the job and done whatever they wanted anyway?
Such a great point, yeah.
So there's got to be a balance. Like I said, we obviously still make sure that everything is in compliance and all those mandatory items sit within each document. But really, the whole point and the whole mantra of HAZ Co is making safety simple. And to do that, it means making the language more understandable to the average Joe and making the documentation easy to read and easy to follow and easy to access. And I guess that's the whole, 88% of Australians have a smartphone, so that made sense for us to have.
It's kind of like I sometimes talk about with our clients the 10-year-old test when they're creating systems and documents and communication within their businesses of could your 10-year-old understand basically what needs to be done here? And it sounds a little bit like that with the four pages versus the 28 pages. It's more likely to get used if it's simpler. And there's like an inverse relationship between the number of pages and the likelihood that the system is actually going to be used. So, it's sort of, it passes the 10-year-old test of a level of understanding there. And I think we've just lost Vanessa. Coxie, while we wait for Vanessa to come back.
I've got an interesting question I'm ready to pose to Vanessa when she's able to join us again. I'm really intrigued. So something that we've been talking a lot about with our members of late has been the generational difference. Mm. And I can imagine that actually formulating this program, this app, this the whole safety experience must be really challenging to do so in a way that all the generations can understand. Because I know as a mum of a 17-year-old, a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old that are all working within or around the trades, their level of understanding is really different to my level of understanding after being in the industry for so many years and having to deal with the safety paperwork. Mm-hmm. I'm really keen to hear how Hazard Co. have managed to ensure that their understanding is comprehensive enough that everybody can have the opportunity to get it, I suppose, mm-hmm. quite simply.
Mm. Right, Vanessa's back. We found her somewhere in the interwebs.
Sorry.
It's not your fault. Have you got a swims for that when you go missing on a podcast?
Internet connection issues. No, unfortunately, cannot solve that problem. We're
probably
on
just,
our own.
Probably just the raging here in the studio when it happens and the swearing that goes on. Which, you know, we're talking technology. So it's a good segue into what Coxie and I were just sort of posing while you were floating around in the Ethernet thing. About the different generations that are working on the same sites and the use of technology around this. Is that something you guys have addressed?
Yeah. So, look, you know, it's interesting the way that Coxie has sort of asked that question has, you'd almost think that it would be harder for the younger guys to come on board, but it's probably the opposite. So for the newer guys, and it's not necessarily that they're young, it might be just that they're new to building or new to the industry. As with anything, the you know, when you start with something, it's much easier to absorb than if you have been doing something, you know, one way for 30 years and then you try and change it. So yes, there is always going to be you know, someone who takes that little bit longer to, you know, adopt the system or to change an attitude. And that really, again, comes down to communication. And this is a conversation that we have with our builders all the time, is that you cannot make these sort of changes and expect it to be, bang, a board goes up on the fence and all my problems are solved. Mm. It's unfortunately not that simple. It does require you to still have conversations. So you still need to have the conversations. We're not taking away the conversations. We're just trying to make the conversations easier or provide topics for conversation. So, look, in this day and age, and definitely in the last 12 months with COVID, you know, the whole scanning in and out of site is definitely not something that is too tricky. Most people are quite used to it now. And most of the app performs off the back of that scan. So really what comes after that is the active safety management. So the ability to create a swims and submit a swims, the ability for a site supervisor to do a site review or hold a toolbox talk, for guys to check their vehicles and do maintenance checks. And again, you know, like I said, 88% of Australians have a smartphone. So there's a very small percentage of them that won't. And generally the builders will be aware of those, you know, those members that maybe have an older device, like a flip phone or, you know, Nokia 3110 and they're still playing Snake. the ability then obviously is, you know, you either need to have a conversation around the technology or you pair them up with someone who has the technology. So the likelihood is they're generally not working alone, they're within a team. And it just means that they share the device of someone else to scan themselves in, or, you know, worst case scenario, site supervisor can scan someone in. Mm. But what we're trying to do is obviously make it much more of an individual responsibility. So we don't want the site supervisor going around scanning everyone in. We want everyone to take responsibility for their own health and safety and know their own processes and scan themselves in. But we realise that these things happen. I mean, my husband's a sparky. I don't know how many phones have fallen off roofs. being sat on. My favourite was our apprentice when he sat on a really hot roof and had his phone in his back pocket and the phone bent. So I had to take it back to Optus in a V shape. There has definitely been a learning curve around technology and definitely insurance policies for trade-owned phones.
Yes.
Generally, most of the population finds it very easy to do. Again, you know, it's a 2-second process to scan the QR code and click a button and you're scanned in, and you click another button and you're scanned out. And when it comes to their active safety management, it's all, you know, click and drop box. So, again, they're not having to really think about what or how they should say things. We've provided that in there for them. It's literally just looking around the site and going, oh, yeah, that's there or that's not there. So I'm going to tick this box or I'm going to put a cross here and I'm going to take a photo as evidence and now I'm done and I can move on with the rest of my day.
Mm. I wish I could time travel back to 7 years ago with this app and put it into my business at that place. It's just so simple compared to the way it used to be done.
Yeah, and look, it's always improving. You know, that's the good thing about being digital. Back when we were a paper-based business, it was a long process to have to change or modify anything if it wasn't quite up to scratch. Mm. Digital, you know, you say, members don't like this, and within a couple of weeks, you know, you've got a new version of it, fixing that particular problem or trying to make that easier process. So we do work with our membership base, and even those who are just trialing our system as a free trial, we you know always have a chat with those guys as well. So even if it's not the right fit for them, well, why isn't it the right fit for you? Give us some feedback because we'd love to learn how we can make it you know better and improve with time. So the idea is not just to have a static you know system. It fits the bill right now. The idea is, how do we make it, you know, the best system for everyone, give them the most value out of their health and safety and make it the easiest to roll out. So that is something that we're definitely working on. So really good question, Foxy, because, you know, it can vary business to business, but we do have teams that help our members. So we do have a whole customer success team that basically, you know, trains and develops both tradies and builders to implement the system into their own journeys and then tracks them along the way. So, you know, checks in on them and says, I can see you're still not doing toolbox talks, Jim. What's going on? Vanessa, I don't have time to do toolbox. Yes, you do. You do have time. You're going to make time. It's a quick conversation, a two-minute phone call, and then you're going to log it and then you're going to have it there and it's all going to be okay. So that's a big one. Time is
yeah. It's interesting you talk about toolbox talks, Vanessa, because it's a multi-use tool. It's a multi-tool.
It is a multi-tool. Yes. There's another pun.
And but there's something that I'm blown away by how many business owners don't do weekly team meetings, daily toolbox talks or team huddles or whatever you like. From our perspective, they're a team morale tool, they're a training tool, they're a organizational tool, they're a way to make sure everyone's on the same page, that productivity's up. And if they're doing it for safety, then it almost becomes an easy thing to add on a couple of other agenda items each day. And you've got everyone on board, everyone knows what everyone else is doing, you've run through the jobs, you've told them how long they've got to do particular components of the work, and you actually run a better business that way. And the team enjoy their work more because they've got certainty and clarity about what they're doing. So they're not frustrated or, you know, scrolling through Instagram behind the port-a-loo because they don't know what they're supposed to do next and they don't want to go and ask. So to add safety into that or vice versa, it's like, you know, you got yourself your very own business Leatherman.
Yeah, it's and look, it is obviously designed around safety, but the subheadings that sit within the toolbox talk, some of them aren't related to, you know, not fully to safety. So, you know, one of the topics is upcoming work.
Yeah.
Upcoming work can be a lot of things.
Mm.
Another one is worker engagement, which is essentially just what are the guys saying once you've said whatever you had to say. Mm. If they're bringing issues up to you. So it's definitely, you know, toolbox talk is definitely a safety name, but it's not necessarily just about safety. And it is really interesting because you look at all other industries and it's very normal. I mean, it'd be weird if you went into a corporate job and you weren't having a staff meeting. Like, what do you mean? How do you communicate? How do I know what I'm doing?
Yeah.
But you go onto a work site and apparently, no, it's too hard to ask it.
Show up, pick up some tools and look busy.
Yeah. It's a common conversation we have. And I think the main sort of blocker for a lot of builders holding toolbox talks is that they do work with 100% subcontracted workforce. So in their mind, they're like, well, I can't ask them to, you know, come away from their businesses to talk about my business. And it's like, well, but you're paying them. So you are providing them work, which means they should make time for you to have a conversation. But it doesn't need to be the traditional, you know, let's go to the job site at 6 a.m. and have a barbie and, you know, chin wag. Yes, some people don't have time for that, and lots of people are working in very remote areas that just they don't have time to go back to a particular job site. But it can be as easy as picking up the phone and literally having a conversation, even if you have to have it one by one. So even if you don't want to, you know, bring them all together and have one group conversation, well, that's okay, but you've still got to have a conversation. So pick up the phone and have it and then record it. And then you've got that as a piece of evidence that I did actually discuss that particular issue.
Yeah.
Even if it's not weekly, you know, starting with fortnightly or monthly, is a good starting place. And then, you know, as you move forward, each business is structured different. So we understand that it's not always easy to do it the traditional way. And the other way is that the toolbox meeting actually generates a PDF report. So you can email it as well. So even if you don't have a physical conversation, you can still send out correspondence with regards to whatever it is that you're talking about. They're all date and time stamped as well. So when you're looking at a project, you can clearly see all the conversations that have been had between various different parties. It's a really good way for even the guys who've got employed trades to use it like a mini site diary. This happened today. Tom did this and Bob did that. And tomorrow, Simon, I need you to do this. Simple. It's all there. Everyone can see it.
Vanessa, it sounds to me like we've just removed a whole bunch of excuses for employers, business owners to do the right thing, you know, to do what's best and best practice. And it's not just about safety. That's what I think is an important point about it. It's about actually running a good business. And at the moment with material shortages, the state of the labor market, the uncertainty about economic conditions for the next 12 to 24 months, or maybe the next 30 years, who knows? It's more important now than ever to have good, tight business practices. And safety as a system is a part of that, but it has that multifaceted benefit of running a tighter team. And, you know, I think the whole "I don't have time to do a toolbox meeting," that's a load of bullshit. It's that you're not making it a priority. And I think business owners let themselves make too many BS excuses about why they're not doing things rather than just make it a priority, choose to do it, and allow the benefits to actually come off the back of that rather than just convince themselves that it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and you're in that camp, then that's great, because there are people like and businesses like Hazard Co., Vanessa and the team. Obviously, here at Tradies in Business, we support our clients to implement those changes. So that's what I love about what you guys are doing, Vanessa. It's just there's no excuse. It's simple. Mm-hmm. It's affordable. It's well supported. You really have no reason not to do something like this and stop making safety such a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Yep, agree. What it does is it really encompasses everyone. So once you start sharing the load, once you start having those conversations, it makes people more accountable for their own actions and essentially makes them part of the conversation. And if you start listening to what they're saying from their perspective, I guess listening to their excuses, you can all come together and come up with a common ground where, you know, maybe you both will save time if you're on the same page. Often, you know, it's a bit of a tit for tat battle. Oh, my subbies won't do it. I don't have enough time, whatever it might be. And there's always this sort of ball flowing across the court as to whose responsibility or whose job it should be. Why can't it be both? Why can't we just have a conversation and, you know, delegate and separate and unite and essentially get the job done quicker, you know, and safely.
All right, Vanessa. So I reckon most of our listeners are probably sold at this point and they want to find out more about Hazard Co. Where do they go and do that?
They can email us at info@hazardco.com or they can go to www.hazardco.com.au or they can call our 1-800 number, which is 1-800-954. And I've forgotten the end of the month.
I was literally.
I was really impressed.
I was thinking, wow, there's even a phone number.
That is amazing.
954-702. I was doing so well too.
Oh. I think you nailed it.
Finished on a high. Vanessa, thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for rolling through the technology challenges with internet dropouts and Zoom stuff. Look, safety is not necessarily the most exciting topic, but then neither is bookkeeping and cash flow and all the other things that we do in our businesses. And Coxie and I were literally having a bit of a conversation this morning in our content meeting this morning about things are hard. Business is hard. Life's hard. Safety's hard. Kids are hard. You know, money's hard. Just accept the fact that there's work involved and it can be hard, and it's going to be hard. And there's things that you can do to actually just get it done and get on with it and stop moaning about things. So great to have you on the podcast. Stoked, as always, that you guys support our Tradies in Business members and our community through the Excellence Awards and obviously through some more things that we'll be working on in the future as I get my words out. check it out, listeners, hazardco.com.au. Because I noticed there's a .com and a .au. One's got a .com and one's
got a .au. It doesn't matter. It'll go to, if you just put hazardco.com, it'll send you to the AU page. It's because we exist in New Zealand and Australia. So it'll work out where you're entering your website in from and send you to the right address in either way.
Fancy.
You really are the whole package, aren't they?
All right, listeners, no excuse. Go get it done. Vanessa, thanks again and have a fantastic Friday.
Thank you so much, guys. Always a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Tradies in Business podcast with Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Find out more about today's guest, tools for your trade business and other cool stuff at tradiesinbusiness.com.au.